laughter, and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Verse 5, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He, now notice the change from the plural to the singular. Verse 5, it is they that sow in tears. Verse 6, it is he, that is the individual, that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. And now over to Galatians in chapter 6. Galatians 6. Thanks very much, Father. Galatians 6, just for the sake of time, you're aware of the chapter concerning one being overtaken with a fault, restoring and that, but just come down, please, to verse number 7. Galatians 6, verse 7. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. That verse tells us that whether we like it or not, we're sowing, and we are sowers. Verse 8, for he that soweth to his flesh, or soweth to himself, as one rendering has it, shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And verse 10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Now often it is spoken and often it is said, and it is true, that when we're speaking of sowing, we're often thinking of gospel work and thinking of personal testimony, of speaking to someone and sowing that seed of the word and so on. And our prayers that it'll take root, and we're going to touch on that a little too, but there's something else. We live our lives as people that sow. We are. I was thinking about this just recently. If I never ever passed a track out, if I never ever spoke to anyone about their need, Galatians chapter 6 says, yeah, I still have sown. It says, I have sown to the flesh. I have sown to myself. Or I have allowed other things to take the place of that sowing. The whole of our Christian experience, the summation of our Christian experience is really one of a sower. It's interesting as you go through the Bible how much emphasis is put on sowing. So there must be a reason. Now, in the day in which we live, you know, you talk about, if we don't get a crop in, say, the United States, the Lord forbid that doesn't happen, suppose you didn't get a crop of soybeans in the United States of America, you'll get soybeans from Brazil. Brazil, who used to be the biggest importer of soybeans and the biggest customer worldwide to buy them 30 years ago, today is one of the biggest exporters. So when the Bible's speaking about sowing and the preciousness of the seed and so on, it's not thinking about it in our modern day terms. It is speaking about something where the whole existence of that tribe, of that nation, of that people depended on the sower. See, they didn't have, for example, they did not have the modern irrigation equipment that we would have today. So how did they irrigate? How did they get moisture to their crops? They either carried it, or in some of the desert beds with their foot by pressing the ground and so on. They did not have all the things that we have today. Now I realize they didn't have maybe some of the effects, things that we fought with insecticides fight against us and all the diseases that come in our crops today. But nevertheless, there was always opposition to a crop. Always opposition to a crop. Now, the seed had to be one of two things. The seed had to be that which would be eventually bread to the eater, because it would bring forth eventually the bread when the seed is sown. or seed to the sower. So he had to enjoy it both ways. In other words, if he didn't have the seed, he wouldn't have the bread. If he didn't take time to put the seed in the ground with full confidence and trust that it could and should bring forth, he couldn't live the next year. That's how important. Remember the Lord Jesus spoke about a man planting seed and he would wait day and night to see how the seed's going. He doesn't know how it's growing. But his concern is this, that if that seed that I plant does not bring forth, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to survive. That's why when you read of famines in the Bible, there are such critical times. We think, yeah, say so. Country is a famine. We have relief organizations. We do this, we do that. Not in Bible times. Not in Bible times. Remember what it says about the prodigal in the far country? No man gave unto him. His only hope of survival was to go and join the citizens of the country and so on, and became involved in the feeding of those pigs and swine and so on. So we think of Elimelech back in the book of Ruth, going down there, way down to the land of Moab, because there was a famine where he came from. So he had to move. He thought he had to do something. So the point is this, that when you're reading your Bible about sowing of seeds and crops and sort of thing, they are much more critical than they are today, simply because of the infrastructure that we have in place to help countries that have total crop failures or they just don't make it. Now, coming back to the 126th Psalm, because I'm going to deal with that first. Here were people that knew something about a captivity. As you know as well as I do, that's a subject in itself, how that they, God bless them. They thought, hey, son, do we really need to withhold from sowing our seed in the seventh year? And we'll go ahead. He's not going to spoil our crop. They would plant their crop. They got away with it. That's interesting. And everything else that God had commanded them that they weren't to do, in fact, I hardly would ever read where the year of Jubilee was ever carried out, except that it had to be where the land was returned to its original owner and so on. That was a recession-proof plan that God gave to his people. But they never honored it. And the result of that was this. They ended up in captivity. When they're in captivity, who's going to sow now? Who's going to plant your crops now? Nobody. Nobody cared about them. Those were difficult years, but they did survive. They were God's people, and they did survive, even though it was the enemies that fed them. But the psalmist here in the 126th Psalm is longing that the Lord would turn again the captivity of Zion, and we were like them that dream. In other words, they dreamed of the day when it was the season. There was the man out sowing the seed, spreading it around. And they were a moving people. They were a force to be reckoned with. God blessed their crops. Nobody got crops like they did. You understand, brethren, and so do I, that God yet will make the desert blossom. Where with all our genetically designed seeds and that we can't get something to grow in the deserts of Palestine, God will. God will. Be just like you going out there to the shore, the Jersey shore, and decide you're going to plant your garden in the sand. You know it's not going to make it. But if God says he's going to bless it, it doesn't matter what it's in. So those people long to get back to that day when they were actively engaged in sowing. Because as I pointed out earlier, it's not just the thought of the sowing of seed. What's before me this morning is not necessarily, quote, it'll include that, maybe. The need to sow the seed of the word in the gospel. We likely don't do enough of that. But it's that our whole life, our entire life as a Christian, is that of a sower. Because Galatians chapter 6 says that I'm sowing one of two ways, in one of two directions, and to one of two people. I either sow to myself, I sow to the flesh, I sow to the spirit, or I sow unto the Lord of the harvest. But, like I say, it says this, when the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion. Now, I just want to simply take and apply, brothers and sisters, the truth of the captivity of Zion to a captivity that we very subtly come into as God's people. And you say, well, I'm not in captivity today. No chains on me. Isn't that interesting? That's an interesting statement. Do you realize that the people that argued with the Lord Jesus in John chapter 8 and said, we're never in bondage to any man. Who are they kidding? They were in bondage while they spoke. They were in the bondage under Rome. They didn't realize that. They just became used to it. It was a way of life. You don't need me to come all the way from Canada here and tell you that we live in a very big world of captivity. There was a time, and I'm not excusing myself, I'm not standing here pointing the fingers, when we were busier than we are today. The hyper-scheduled world that we live in is designed, I say, by the enemy to thwart the purposes of God in salvation and to spoil the purposes of God in Christ Jesus through his people. So what does that captivity do? It causes us to do nothing. Not only just the sowing of the seed relative to the gospel, but sowing it spiritually. You see, when, I'll give you an example. Understand that when you, as part of a testimony, part of the assembly, realize where this week's Bible reading is, and you prepare for that, and you come to contribute, do you understand? That's not sowing to the flesh. That is sowing to the Spirit. You are building something into the mainstream crop of what this little company here in Midland Park is going to produce. We say, where do you get that? 1 Corinthians chapter 3. What's it tell you? Ye are God's dwelling. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's tilled field. God looks down at this little, I don't want to say this little, good number of people here this morning. I don't know why I'm using that word. I guess we call Sussex little too, and there's close to 50 in fellowship. But God, I guess, compared with these mega churches, that whatever they look at us is pretty small. But never mind. God looks down and he says, there's my tilled field. I farmed long enough to learn this. The fact of the farm is this, that if cultivation is neglected, if the plow is parked and never used, you know what will happen to that land? It'll return just right back to originally what it was, with the thorns and the briars and the stumps and thistles and everything in it that would hinder growth and production and making it what we would call today virgin soil. So, if I'm going to view myself today as a sower, how am I making out? What kind of a crop do I expect to reap? You see, I meet people sometimes and they'll say, you know, they can become very critical in their assessment of maybe even the assembly they're in and that sort of thing, but I sometimes ask them, well, what are you sowing into it? What are you sowing into it? When I act unnecessary, I realize we have jobs and sometimes we cannot be there, but when I unnecessarily absent myself from any function of that local field, understand, I'm affecting its production. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 3, that's Galatians chapter 6, and that's the 126th Psalm with Israel of old. So here are people, and I said, we are like them that dream. What did David dream for in 2 Samuel chapter 23? There were all his enemies around. He dreamed of getting back to days where he could just get to Bethlehem and get a drink of that water. You know, sometimes we dream of things in the earlier days and we get back, oh, that wasn't so great. What was all that about? But as kids, for example, I can remember a fish and chip shop back where we used to live. And if we were real good boys, and that was seldom, my dad would take us to the fish and chip shop. Boy, that was the best ever. Last time I was there, I wasn't that impressed with it. We thought it was great then. Are you like that in your Christian experience? Do you ever want to get back to more productive days? Are you as productive today as you could be, spiritually speaking? Are you expecting a better crop than what you have planted? These people had done nothing. Notice. I mean, just go down to, then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. What's that got to do with the crop? What's that got to do with the sower? Everything. It was all part of it. There was a joy that was involved in it. We had a dear man down east since gone to heaven, his name was Johnny Boulder. Johnny Boulder is one of those fellows that could grow a crop when nobody else could grow a crop. But if you talked to him, you wouldn't think that. If you went to Johnny Boulder and said, Johnny, how was the potato crop? No, he says, it was all right. And you knew right well that prices were good. It was a good year for them, and everything was going for it. You would ask him sometimes, he'd say, Johnny, prices were good. How was the crop? Yield was very poor. And the truth is, likely he'd be the top, but just not as high as he thought he should be. Another time you'd say to him, good prices, or a good crop this year. Prices weren't any good. Mr. Ramsey was his brother-in-law, so I guess I could tell you this story. He told me this himself. There was one year when the prices were good and the crop was good. And he personally said to him, Johnny, says, how is it this year? He says, you had good prices, you had a good crop. Oh, he says, very hard on the land. Man, you're not a good one. You can't win with that. There are people like that. It wouldn't matter what. I mean, so you and I get excited. For example, we get excited. Why not get excited? I wish there was more excitement about it. We reach out to a neighbor. We sow the seed. We've got a young brother back away. These brothers know him well at Sussex. And he's kind of put this all on our mark a little bit, isn't he? I mean, he comes home and he's imprinting his little labels, getting his labels, so he's off with his tracks and he's going. He's moving. And there's a joy about it. And I just know that there's certain believers that he could walk up to and say, guess who I got coming to meeting tonight? And say, oh. Don't feel like shaking them sometimes. Well, why not get excited about it? Let me ask you this. What excites you? We farmed. As you know, I've farmed a good number of years. We had a neighbor. His name was George Sells. And as boys, we were like the bad. We were. My dad, we'd be back working hard. And we said, Dad, here comes George. George would come back with his wagon, his tractor, and his seed, and maybe about 4 cases of beer. And he would prop those seed bags around, and he'd sit up, he'd put his back against it, he'd start to drink about 10 o'clock. And about 4 o'clock, he'd start to plant. You know what that field looked like when he started to plant? It wasn't very good. He said, what kind of a crop did George get? He didn't get one. Here were people, they longed to get back to those days when God blessed them. They said this, when the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dreamed. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. In other words, the heathen, that outside world, said, what's happened to those people? Nobody blessed those people like God blessed them. They were God's people. And suddenly, they're waking up. And notice what they're saying. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. About time, eh? About time. Boy, it's not far. The willows never seem to be far from the harp. Okay? We can hang our harp on the willows and start to whine all within an hour. And these people have forgotten God had done great things for them. Remember the time when God had done great things for us? I mean, there was, even in our own families or in the gospel work or in the assembly, there was prosperity and things were going, things were moving. And who doesn't like it like that? Did you realize? That takes an arduous sower in praying. In praying. Praying is like an under the seed too. And our sowing. In other words, I'm coming back to the whole preface of what I'm taking up this afternoon is this. That the whole of our life is like that of a sower. Verse number 4. These people finally come, they say, hey, listen, it's not too late. It becomes almost like a prayer. They say, turn again our captivity, O Lord, as streams in the south. Oh, streams in the south? Notice what they're talking about? Laughter. They're talking about their tongue. They can sing. Can I get up with your singing? I thought was pretty good. You know, sometimes I think as Christians, you know, we get the children at Sunday school and we get the brother up here at the front, he's whooping them up, getting them so they can sing. I think we sometimes need to do that with Christians. Seriously, brethren. You don't believe I'm telling you the truth? You just take a cross look sometimes when we're trying to sing our hymns. My, some of the saints are looking there like they've just been shot. And there's barely a movement of anything. Singing! We got things to say about. He said that.
I know a brother was helping me with gospel meetings. And I'd never really spoken in a new area where I was this past week, and realized he was going to ask you almost if he wouldn't, because he's almost throwing me off the track. I mean, God bless him, he's trying his best. And I realized some people couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. Okay, just can't do it. But some of you can. I don't know what it's like here, your normal meetings. But sing like you meant it. These people did. There's a day when they did that. Now the enemies are saying, what happened? These people were known for that. They were known for their God. They were knowing how God blessed them. They were knowing how God prospered them, even when they were released from their captivity. Do it again. They've gone back into captivity. How long was Israel out of Egypt before they wanted to go back? Hours. Hours. Our natural instinct is to go back. Isn't that the same way with these people? The natural instinct is just to turn and go back to it. So easily we can come into that. Now, I don't know what your captivity might be. Our employment can be a source of captivity. We just change it. You say, well, Brother McCandless, you don't understand the day we live in. Well, I think I do a little bit. And sometimes our family can become our captivity. You know, oh, well, we can't go there because we got to take Junior. He's got to go over here for his violin lessons. Well, hopefully he loses the violin. It's going to affect meetings. Oh, and we can't go there. Susie's doing figure skating. I can imagine going to my dad and saying, no, I'm thinking of taking up figure skating. You know, figure you, he'd say. Now, honestly, I'm not here beating up on violin. I'm just pulling a couple of things. But I do know. Now, you go, those that do gospel work know exactly what I'm talking about, because you'll meet people there. They can just go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's the week. Now, what night are your meetings? We can't come. What has the enemy done? He's put them into a captivity. Does that happen among God's people? Wish I could stand here and tell you it never happens among the Christians. It does, brethren and sisters. And I'm going to tell you something. It does not produce happy Christians. It produces Christians that have lost their son. It produces Christians that have lost their joy. Nothing thrills them anymore. Why not? They're in captivity. There's an unseen chain that is around them. And these are people that dream to get back to that day when there's no longer those shackles on us, when we could sow and when we could work together and we could see God move in our midst and so on. You know, talk about the value of just sowing a seed. We got a lovely couple that would be attending meetings in Sussex, and really, they certainly did not get saved through the efforts of anybody in the Sussex Assembly, primarily. Maybe Dieter did. Dieter did, in fact. But his wife, she worked at a big Costco store. She is works in the optical department. And a young brother that gathered the buggies, shopping carts, just said one word to her one day about being saved. Do you ever do that? Say one word to somebody about being saved? Natalie started to ask him a little bit more about this. A little bit more. And pretty soon Armin and his wife were going to see Natalie and Dieter. And Natalie, brought up in Roman Catholicism, got saved. She said, I've looked for this all my life. I think it is just sweet. I think it's just lovely. That God uses a man like the lowest end of the pay scale at Costco to reach a lovely lady. It was so real. It was so real in her life. The change of it so affected Dieter, and he wanted to be saved. He became under such soul searching and conviction of his sin. He lost 30 pounds before he got saved. Someone's going to lose 30 pounds, but who knows to go through that? But here was a man that realized the need of it. Just to show you, brother, okay? So, brethren after me, Murray, go visit this man. I was out visiting him. He was like, oh, my own business. Gave him tracts, wrote down a number of verses, did a number of things for him. Prayed with him, visited him 2-3 times. One of our brethren, Norman Thibodeau, on the way back from the Clemensville conference, he said to his wife, let's go and see Dieter and Natalie. So let's see them. Of course, Dieter right away says, Normally he says, I'm not saved, I want to be saved. Well, he says, where are you reading? So I told him where he was reading. He said, well, I'll write you down a verse or two. Wrote down the same verses that I had given him. Exact same verses. He was the first one who got saved. So it just shows you. There's a man that said, you know, it's a holiday. And why don't I just, we just get out of home. Our family's there. We're coming back after all. We've been to a conference all weekend. But see the value of that? And people that know Norman and Ramon know the joy they have in their soul. That's what these people were missing. Brothers and sisters, listen. I move among an assembly or two. And I move among a good number of God's people. I'm afraid the happy people that we sing that we are, and the happy people at times that we pretend we are, it's not the case. Other things have come in. No, we're no longer like them. We don't care. Do we really want to get back to those days? Are they that important to us? Well, you say, well, I can't live in the past. Listen, these people don't want to live in the past either. They just wanted something in the future that would bring back that joy that they once had in the past. So, verse number 4 says, turn again our captivity to the Lord as streams in the south. The Lord brings refreshment to your soul. It does. As a sower in God's assembly, moving in that tilled field, worshiping, or like our brother this morning, reading a little bit from the book of Habakkuk and sharing it with God's people, something he's enjoyed, others in their worship, things that they had enjoyed, and our brother Edgar too, bringing things out that he had enjoyed of Israel of old in the book of Exodus. You see what they're doing? You see what they're doing? They are sowing to the Spirit. Okay? They are sowing to the Spirit. These men likely have to spend their week working with ungodly men in business world that I'm not saying we can avoid. This is something refreshing about coming amongst God's people. I mean, take your book, take Habakkuk, go read it to your friends you work with. Go to the men you do business with and say, you know, I got something here in Exodus chapter 28 I'm enjoying, I want to share it with you. He said, what are you talking about? See the difference? That's why the psalmist prayed that he be preserved, lest he become like those that go down to the pit. So easily we can go back to that. Then, verse number 5, he says, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. I know different ways that that has been taken. They that sow in tears. Sowing in tears. I gotta admit, I don't know a lot about it. I can honestly tell you their souls, as I've thought about them, I wept. Others I was so burdened for, when I prayed for them, I wept. I wish that was more often than it has been. That's sowing in tears. Missionary told a story one time, wherever in Uganda where he was laboring. And he went by a field that was not too far from a leper colony. He watched two men. The one man had no legs, but a set of arms. The other man had legs, but no arms. The man without the legs was being carried by the man that had the legs. And he was leaning over him, holding onto a bag, and sowing the seed as if it were only that. You know what they're doing while they're doing that? They were singing. That missionary said, you know what I did? He said, I stood there and I wept. I stood there and I wept. He says, I thought, have I ever complained? Have I ever been less joyful than I could have been? Look at those men. What have they got to shout about? What have they got to be joyful about? Is that how we go about sowing when it comes to the assembly? Boy, this is a big field. There's a lot of things that this can be. You say, that might be all application. Excuse me? I will take time and go over the passage and show you what's absolute interpretation of the passages. Then he says, verse number 6, he, and notice I mentioned when I was reading it, that the plural drops to the singular. He that goeth forth weepeth, bearing precious seed, or the seed basket of some of your margins together, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. You say, what's it mean? It means this, that God has promised to bless it. Can I just suggest to you some things about this that are very important? That when it comes to spiritual sowing, allowing our lives to be productive, first of all, there has to be interest. We have to have interest in it.
You know, it's very obvious. You know, if you remember, the wise men said they went by the field of the slothful. Remember how he described that field? It was all grown up with thorns and hedges and so on. Well, why did that happen? Because the man had no interest in it. You know, if you lived in a farming area, you'd understand that the level of a man's interest in what he is doing is often seen by what the land produces. Man has very little interest in it. I talked to a man day before yesterday, and he said, "You know, I'm hoping," he says, "to get the rest of my corn in." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "I want to get the rest of my corn in." I said, "A little late for getting the corn in." "Well," he says, "you know, I just didn't get to it." Well, maybe there's legitimate reasons why. Corn should have been gathered a month ago. It'd be like they're rotting in the field, I would almost think, but obviously there wasn't interest. There has to be genuine interest. It's interesting. The word that is used for labor is to the point of exhaustion. In other words, it's just not, "Well, I'm going to throw this here, it better work." You know, when it comes to sowing in our lives and sowing for God, I'm reminded of gospel meetings that Brother John Meekin and I had. And he said to me, he said, "I need to go to the seed place where I bought the seed for my lawn." He said, "I want to invite the man out, but he said, I got a few things I want to talk to him about." I said, "Sure, sure." So we went along to the place where he bought his seed for his lawn. He said, "Billy," he says, "you know, I've got a few, my lawn looks not bad, but a few bare spots." He says, "What can I do with those bare spots?" And he looked at Mr. Meekin and he says, "You've got to work them." "Work them?" "Yeah. That means like a rototiller or a good hoe. You know what you got to do? You've got to reseed them." I thought, isn't that so true to Christian experience? Come on, brother. We have the bare spots. We have the unproductive areas of our lives if we'll admit to it. What's it going to do? It's going to take some work. Something we're going to have to work on. That's the purpose of ministry, the teaching of the Word of God, that will set us way before our God to be like these people, to long to get back. Not only does there have to be interest, but there has to be investment. Okay? In other words, the Israelite could not sow with what he had not saved. Okay? Now, keep in mind, he had no money to go buy. When that crop had come up, he had to save from it seed for the next season. And they guarded it. That's why in the book of Haggai, remember, Haggai the prophet says, "We'll open those doors of those granaries, barns," the word that he's used there, "they're empty. There's neither in it." And when there's neither seed nor crop, you've got it. You've got famine. So there has to be investment. In other words, you have to take that which is precious and put it in. I mean, for example, I'm not sure what the ratio is. I'm glad there's no farmers here. They could be pick me up pretty quick on it. If you were to buy a bushel of corn as it came off the field, you know what it cost you? $6. If you were to buy a bushel of seed corn, you know what that's going to cost you? $64. Same weight. Likely the same amount of kernels. But you see, the seed is different. The seed has been worked with. There's things done. The seed's been sorted out. It's been pollinated. There's different things that have happened to the seed that has given it the value that it has. So there had to be investment. Investment of your time. And maybe be a financial investment. What's wrong with that? I admire Christians that are prepared. It doesn't matter. They're prepared to invest in it. You know, I think that maybe it's good for me to get back to something I've been doing a little just this past fall, not that I'm here tooting my own horn or telling what I'm doing, but renting halls, you know? You just learn. I don't rent halls for $10 a night anymore. No, $30 a night. And that's a bargain. Cost of heating a hall up and invitations and that sort of thing. Invitations, I think you get them pretty cheaper than you can today, likely. But there is investment. These people understood that. There's a time when they didn't want to do it. Not only is there interest and there's investment, but there is the invisible. Okay? They had to die to what was in Babylon. Okay? They had to die to that before ever they could bring forth back in that land. The invisible. Isn't that true of a spiritual world? We live in a world that's the touchable, it's the tangible, it's the toys, it's the things you've got, things people can see and so on. But you know, it's getting back to really what is real, to what is really at the best moment. More than that, notice I say, not only is there interest in investment in invisible, but there is the individual. He that goeth forth weeping. Now, these people knew a lot about weeping. And when crops failed, there was weeping. There's little children that had to be fed. This was serious business. They knew what it was to have the heartbreak of a crop failure. Sometimes the only crop failure we're praying for is things that we shouldn't have sown. We're praying for a failure then. The Bible says, if we sow to the flesh, we shall of the flesh reap corruption. Definite statement. I can get away with it. So when it comes to the sowing, there's principles in it. There's costliness of the seed. There's the cleanliness of the seed. It being preserved and brought from a previous harvest. There's a pattern to sowing. In the assembly, brethren, there's a pattern. That's why in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, the apostle says, if the foot shall say. Oh, I thought tongues was having their problem in Corinth. No, he says it's the foot. Going to watch our walk. So not only is there the principles of it, the pattern of it, there is the persistence of it. In other words, apathy has to turn to activity. That's right. And making each day count for Him. Making sure that whatever I can sow into this little tilled field for God's glory, whatever part I can do to that, for that, then so be it. If it be for Him. And then, of course, there is the prospect. The prospect of sowing. You go to Western Canada. I remember an old farmer up there, Mr. Taylor, they were talking to him one day, and they said, "Guys, look, you got the boll weevil, you've got this, you got that. Why do you plant a crop anyhow? Last 2 years, you haven't made money at it." You know what he said? "It's all I know how to do." Sometimes we know how to do too many other things. That's why we fail. God help us, brothers and sisters, to get back to those times when we did dream. Those days of salvation. There were songs amongst us. There was a joy amongst us. Now, I am not saying that everybody here is hanging at the mouth, that everybody's down. I'm not saying that at all. I certainly didn't sense it this morning. But may the Lord preserve us, because if the enemy has his way, that's what he will get you to. And that's where he will keep you, in captivity.